Yeah, can you hear me? All right. Okay, good morning, everyone. Okay, let's come to order. So, good morning. My name is David Nahai, and I'm the chair of the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. Today is Thursday, December 18th. It is exactly 9:04 a.m., and I'm calling this meeting to order. Excuse me. For people who only want to listen or to watch the meeting, the board's customary website is available. There is a link to the website on the meeting agenda posted on our website. In addition, we're receiving presentations and public comments through a Zoom meeting platform and in person. For people who want to listen or watch the meeting in Spanish, we have Spanish interpretation services available through the Zoom platform. Instructions are shown on the slide, and I would like now to ask one of our Spanish interpreters to please explain how to participate in Spanish.
Good morning. Buenos días a todos. Bienvenidos a la reunión de la Junta de Agua. Ustedes tienen la oportunidad de poder atender esta reunión en español. Por favor, si ustedes están en línea, pueden ir a su pantalla. En la parte inferior tiene un icono de un globito terráqueo. Ustedes pueden hacer clic aquí, pueden seleccionar su idioma español y con eso ya estarían escuchando la reunión en español. De la misma manera, tenemos español aquí en el lugar. Si ustedes requieren algún tipo de dispositivo, estamos en la parte del fondo de la reunión. Gracias. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Please note that for all LA Regional Water Quality Control Board meetings, there is no expectation of privacy regarding any communications. Meetings are recorded and names of participants are listed in the Zoom forum. Participation in a recorded meeting will be deemed consent to be recorded. Next, let's move on to our roll call and establishment of a quorum. We have roll call, please.
Board Member Ashion.
Present.
I'm sorry, Vice Chair Ashion.
That's okay, present.
Yes, okay.
Thank you.
Board Member Camacho.
Present.
Board Member Christensen. Board Member Mendez.
Here.
Chair Nahai.
Yes.
Roll call completed, thank you.
Thank you. I can confirm that a quorum is present. Board Member Camacho is participating in this meeting from a teleconference location as authorized by Government Code Section 11123. And the teleconference rules are different than remote participation rules. There is no requirement to have a physical quorum, and there is no requirement to ask if any individuals over the age of 18 are in the same room. Thank you for your participation today, Board Member Camacho. Okay, let's move on now to the order of the agenda. Please note that agenda items are numbered for identification purposes only and may not necessarily be considered in this order. So I will ask our Executive Officer, Susana Arredondo, if there are any changes to the order of the agenda.
Good morning, Chair. There are no changes to the order of the agenda.
Okay. Next is item number 3, which is the approval of draft minute meetings for the November 20th meeting. So let me ask, first of all, if there are any changes to the draft meeting minutes from any of the board members, any changes? Okay, then I will ask for a motion to approve.
So moved.
Vice Chair Ashton moves. Board Member Mendez seconds by nodding. So I'll take that as a second. So we have a motion and a second. Let's have the roll call, please.
Vice Chair Ashton.
Yes.
Board Member Camacho.
Yes.
Board Member Mendez.
Yes.
Chair Nahai.
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's move on to item number 4 of our agenda, which are board member communications. We'll start first with ex-party disclosures. Board members will identify any discussions they may have had requiring disclosure pursuant to Government Code Section 11143. 30.40. So board member Mendez, any ex parte communications?
None to report.
Vice Chair Ashton?
None, thank you.
Board member Camacho, ex parte communications? Okay, thank you. And I have none to report. Next, we'll move on to board member reports, and board members may discuss communications, correspondence, or other items of general interest relating to matters within the board's jurisdiction. Let me ask if there are any reports. I'll start with you, Vice Chair Ashton.
Just briefly, I wanted to wish everyone a happy holidays. I hope that everyone's having a wonderful holiday season. I also just during this season of gratitude wanted to express my thank you and gratitude to my board colleagues, our EO, our assistant executive officers, and all of the staff for their hard work and dedication over the course of the year for our community. I'm really grateful to be part of this group and really appreciate all of the work that you do on behalf of the people of Ventura and Los Angeles. So thank you. I wish everyone a happy holidays, and I am looking forward to our board retreat in January where we'll plan our priorities for the year ahead. That's it for me. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you very much. Board Member Mendez.
Just to echo those happy holidays and gratitude to staff and the general public for participating with us here at the board. I look forward to 2026.
Thank you. Board Member Camacho.
Yes, Vice Chair had expressed sentiments exactly how I feel in terms of the appreciation and gratitude for what all that staff has done in a very difficult year, I would say. So looking forward to 2026 as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I will, I think Churchill once said that everything that needed to be said has been said, but it hasn't been said by everybody. So I will echo what my other board members have said. I really do want to thank, first of all, fellow board members for our collaboration during this year and everything that we've done together. I'd like to thank our governor for appointing us to this position, and many, many thanks to staff for all of the hard work that has been done in 2025. We were just talking a little earlier, and I said, you know, I for one will not be sorry to say goodbye to 2025. So I'm saying hello to 2026 with open arms and a good attitude, and I hope that that the travails of the last year will be behind us. But thanks to everybody, and thank you also to everyone during the past year who've come here and who've presented to us and argued before us and persuaded us, and it's been actually, I think, very meaningful from that point of view. So thank you. All right. Next, we will move on to our executive officer's report. Our EO, Ms. Arredondo.
Yes. Thank you, Chair and Vice Chair and Board, for your kind words towards staff. Thank you. Before I provide my update, we'll start with a presentation from Erin Wilson-Olgen. She's the South Coast Regional Manager with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. She will present on the Bayona Wetlands Restoration Project. The board is welcome to ask questions following that presentation. And then after that presentation, I will have an update on Santa Susana Field Laboratory. So she is attending, Erin is on virtually.
Okay.
Good morning. Morning, board members. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Thank you for being here with us.
I have just a short presentation. So just so everybody who doesn't know me, my name is Erin Wilson-Olgen. I'm the new regional manager. Well, not that new anymore. The regional manager for the Department of Fish and Wildlife in the South Coast region. And so I'm just going to give you a quick update on the Bayona wetlands in general. So if you want to, next slide. So the Bayona Wetlands Restoration Project still does remain a priority for the department. But currently, it is on pause. We're not doing any development on the project at this point until we revise the environmental impact report that was required by the court order. We are still doing our stewardship and our land management and any other outreach activities on the property. Next slide. We still have community members who continue to express concerns regarding the proposed restoration project. I continue to encourage stakeholder discussions. My door is always open to have any kind of public engagement or stakeholder meetings. The department is committed to transparency in this process. Next slide. Currently, we're working on updating the EIR, the two sections that were required by the court order to update. We're revising the hydrology section and revising the calculations on that. And then we should hopefully, I'm going to say hopefully, have public comments on the revised EIR by 2026. I'm not going to give a specific date at this point because I wanted it done by the end of this year, and that hasn't happened yet. So I'm hopeful to get this done by in 2026. I can update you guys later if that changes. So next slide. And then the last thing to mention is that we continue to engage with our fellow tribes. We have a really good relationship with them and have done several projects and coordinated with them on several activities for interpretive services and signage. We did get a request from the tribe, from the Tongva tribe, to initiate an ancestral land return, but that's just in its infancy and we really just haven't started working on that. So all that has just begun. And I think really that's all my updates. I'm expecting you guys to have questions. So that's the end of my presentation.
Thank you. We always do prize brevity, so I want to thank you for that. But I think that your presentation does give rise to a number of questions, and I will start with other board members who have questions. I know that I have some.
I'm okay right now. Go ahead.
Okay. Board Member Mendez, you want to?
Sure. Just some clarity in terms of the public comment. Is that opening public comment or responding to public comment by 2026? I was a bit confused by that.
We did the NOP, I believe, last year, and we did get some public comments, and then we had to stop working on the EIR because we ran out of funding with our contractor. And so we've been working internally to address some of those NOP comments, and we hope to release the draft public document, the EIS or our EIS, for public review this year. So yes, public comments.
This year, at the end of this year, or beginning of next year?
I've already moved on. Sorry, 2026.
Okay, great. And then you said you lost funding. So that has been in the public comment questions about priority for the department or the Natural Resources Agency to find funding to complete the EIR and this public comment period. Can you tell us what discussions have been with the director or the secretary to find that funding to complete this project?
In regards to funding for completing the project, we haven't had any conversations yet because our first priority is to finish the CEQA document because we can't.
I'm sorry, I misspoke about the funding for the CEQA document.
We just felt that it was such a small amount that we need to finish the document that it was easier for us to prioritize it in region and use staff time to do it.
So funding has been identified?
Yes, internally, yes.
Okay, thank you. I'll pass it on to my colleagues.
Thank you. Board Member Camacho, questions from you?
Yes, I know that you provided the timeline for the EIR revision, but I know that we've had a lot of comments in regards to the NEPA process and some of the public comments around, you know, why is nothing happening in regards to that? And so I just wanted to get a better understanding of what you all are doing in terms of the NEPA process.
So all of that is on hold. A lot of that happened before my tenure here started. So my understanding is that the Corps did not pursue the EIS at this point because they don't have a complete or a construction project that's in enough in a final stage, or like, what is it, like 60% design for them to continue. And so at some point when we continue with the project design, then we can go back to the Corps and engage them in consultation. And at that point, when they decide what their federal action will be, then they can do the environmental document for that project, which is how things are done. Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm hearing is that really the progress or the step that's needed to push the NEPA document forward is under the Corps, Army Corps of Engineers jurisdiction.
Right. Yeah. So every time there's the permit is the federal action that requires the environmental review. So at that time, when they do have a federal action in front of them, then they would decide what the appropriate document would be.
Mm-hmm. And has there been any discussions from the Army Corps of Engineers about, you know, continuing on? A lot of projects and programs are being cut at the federal level. And so are there any risks in regards to this current project?
You know, that's a really good question. I haven't really engaged the Corps on this project because I wasn't ready to. But I just had some conversations about engaging them because I haven't. So it is a good question and something I need to look into in 2026 as we move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much for taking the time to be with us today and for your presentation. And I know that I think you're driving or you're probably between meetings and so on. So we appreciate it. I have to say though that I, for one, as a citizen of this area, not as a board member on this body, I found not much comfort in what it is that you told us, and I know that you know this hasn't been during your tenure, and therefore I'm not saying that you personally shoulder any responsibility here at all. I'm not saying that, but you know, when I think members of the public hear phrases like, "Well, that's on hold," or "This is on pause," or "We're working on deficient sections," or "We hope that something will happen in 2026, which is a year from now," you know, people will understandably hear those comments and I think legitimately complain that this is not moving forward with the kind of alacrity and commitment that I think residents of this region deserve. So, and I'm not saying that this is your responsibility at all, but I think more does need to be done. I'm sure you would agree with that. And my question for you is, as the Regional Water Quality Control Board, what more can we do in order to assist this process move forward? We're very much in favor of the restoration plan. We think it is long overdue, and it needs to be pursued, as I said, with commitment. So perhaps you can tell us, or perhaps in discussions with staff, we can get to a point where we can understand what more we can do to move this forward. I mean, I was honestly, I was hoping in your presentation that we would hear a more definitive statement of timelines and you know and actions and milestones and so on. And I understand you're not able to provide that. So I want to thank you, but I hope that we can do more here together to satisfy what are really legitimate concerns on the part of the public about what is happening with Bayona. So, and if any other comments from board members?
Yeah, I just like to reiterate that this, as our chair And Vice Chair and my fellow board member Camacho have all stated that this is a priority for us as a board, and we care deeply as ensuring that these water bodies are repaired. There's adequate opportunity for stewardship, co-management stewardship with tribal nations and groups. And we really look forward to an opportunity to work as partners. We are your peers, we are lateral peers, but we would like to know how we could move forward. And you know, if this is something that our chair and EOs need to work with the director and the secretary with, I think that possibly that might be another avenue to have a meeting between the principals between our board, the agency, and the department, perhaps.
I think that would be great. I can't agree more about the frustration and the disappointment and how slow this is going as well. I do understand your concerns, and I appreciate your support. I've been working with your staff quite a bit the last couple of months and trying to find solutions for funding. I think that's going to be the biggest issue moving forward is funding, for obvious reasons. But I appreciate your support.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I know that, Jenny, did you have a comment?
Yes, Chair Nahai, Jenny Newman. I wanted to respond to your request that staff offer some solution to offer our help to Fish and Wildlife to move forward. And staff could draft a letter to initiate this process that Board Member Mendez brought up. We could draft a letter to Fish and Wildlife enumerating the requirements of the TMDL for the Biona wetlands and the board's desire to implement that TMDL as soon as possible, and put forward a timeline or a schedule that we think is reasonable. I hear that that Ms. Olgan Wilson, you know, said that and she's correct. We've been, as she said, trying to find external sources of funding to help complete the EIR, and we've been unsuccessful. And so, Fish and Wildlife is going to use internal resources to complete the EIR. She said. So maybe if we wrote a letter to Fish and Wildlife, you know, explaining the board's strong desire to move forward at a faster pace, that might help. And I would be interested in hearing what Aaron's response to that was, or your response, Chair Nahai, if you think that would be a good idea, or we could propose, you know, something else to make your wishes known.
I do think that would be a good idea. I also think that Board Member Mendez's idea about possibly having an in-person meeting with maybe, you know, an ad hoc committee of the board with Fish and Wildlife maybe a way to try to move things forward as well. You know, so I think we can explore a couple of options, but thank you very much for that. I think that letter would be helpful, and I think it may be helpful to Fish and Wildlife as well to have that in the record. This, you know, the expression of a strong desire to move forward on this. So, you know, we can talk about various options. But thank you very much for that. And Ms. Arredondo? No, okay. All right, well, Norma? Okay. Oh, I see a hand up. Yes. Go ahead, board member.
Yeah, and just one thing I want to emphasize is that after we do get this meeting and get ourselves much more organized in terms of timelines and expectations, we really do, or I think Fish and Wildlife really needs to begin a conversation with the Army Corps of Engineers ASAP. And to know if there are any changes in their commitment to this project would be vital. Before we spend a lot of time moving forward, we may have to go a totally different route if they do change their commitment. So, again, getting the revision of the EIR is just the tip of the iceberg of things that need to get done. Thank you.
Agree. And Jenny and I had talked about doing that and reaching out to the core so we can do that in early 2026.
All right. Well, thank you very, very much for your time, for sure. speaking with us today. It was so appreciated. And hopefully there'll be more conversations to come and more actions to come as well. Thanks so much.
For having me. Thank you for having me anytime.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, so go back to the EO's report.
Yes, thank you. Now moving on to the second part of my update. This is regarding Santa Susana Field Laboratory. On November 4th, 2025, the Watershed Regulatory Section staff attended the Santa Susana Field Laboratory Stormwater Expert Panel site tour and public meeting. During this event, the expert panel provided an update on the previous storm season sampling results and the best management practices for stormwater runoff implemented at SSFL. This event included a tour of the locations where the best management practices have been implemented at the recent soil remediation sites, such as the Area 1 burn pit and the Area 1 shooting range. Additionally, the tour highlighted the ongoing B1 biofilter modification aimed at addressing the revised effluent limitation for mercury discharges to the northern drainage. The expert panel also discussed the results of data collected from the ponds at SSFL to evaluate the potential for infiltration. The expert panel stated that the infiltration rates at the ponds are minimal and consistent with previous findings. The infiltration study is included in the expert panel's annual report that was submitted on October 31st, 2025, and is currently under review by staff. Attendees of the event included Simi Valley's Mayor Pro Temp and current former Simi Valley Council members, Simi Valley staff, Cayegas Municipal Water District, Parents Against SSFL, Wishtoyo Foundation, Ventura Coast Keepers, LA Water Keepers, and the Department of Toxic Substance Control. Following the tour, a public meeting was held that evening at the Courtyard Hotel in Simi Valley, where the expert panel provided an overview of the results reported in the annual report. This concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the executive officer? I'm seeing none. All right, we will move on now to hearing an update from our State Water Board liaison board member, Laurel Firestone.
There we go. Good to see you all, and echo the thanks and appreciation for the work this year, and also the hope that next year is better. So I didn't give an update last month, so I'm just going to add a few highlights, a few things that happened in November. We held a stormwater capture and use workshop, and there was really wonderful overview of the different types of projects that are going on regarding stormwater capture, school greening, you know, public lands irrigation, and of course, water supply augmentation projects, and many of which were in the LA region. Just if folks are interested, you can, you know, the recording of the workshop is up online. It was on November 18th, but I just really, you know, this region, the LA region, is such a leader in this, obviously with Measure W, and but also just the leadership of community leaders in developing projects. And I know this board has been at the forefront of that and trying to enable that, and has a lot going on regarding stormwater right now, and just held a workshop on the CII permit. We also issued, at the very end of October, the notification and response levels were revised for PFOA and PFOS, as well as some of the other compounds like PFAS HXS and PFHXA. So those, more information on those new and revised notification levels are on our website, but we did issue those. They're really bring it into alignment with the federal MCL that was rolled out, and we're continuing to work on, of course, monitoring and move forward with potential consideration of public health goals and MCLs. But this is sort of the first step in aligning federal and state and getting more permanent standards in effect. We also adopted our fund expenditure plan for the SAFER program, the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund. We did see extension of that program's funding in the greenhouse gas funds to what it was going to sunset in 2030. It's now extended through 2045, and it continues to be $130 million annually through that fund. We do an annual fund expenditure plan to focus on or to identify how we're prioritizing that funding and also leveraging the other state and federal funding that's available for drinking water infrastructure. We have continued to support the, and I mentioned this, I think, before, but the Agricultural Expert Panel. This is a group of experts that we charged with answering specific questions to help us review our irrigated land regulatory program. And they have been meeting regularly. They will continue to meet through January, and we're expecting some kind of a final report in January, or at least a final draft report. It may get extended, but I would say in the first quarter of next year, we will be getting some response from that panel, including just considerations of whether there should be limits regarding nutrient levels, whether there should be how we could best incorporate regenerative ag practices and look at the needs and appropriate frameworks for different, that may be different in different regions and small agricultural diversified farms and things like that. So there's more information, but look forward to, I will say this region and all regions have been really great in providing that expert panel presentations on the regional programs and the particular regional needs and practices of agriculture in their region. There is a lot going on water rights permitting. So there are a number of hydroelectric projects that we're looking at, that we're considering FERC licensing or certifications for. We issued an updated water measurement and reporting regulations. We rolled out our new Cal Waters reporting electronic software for reporting. We're continuing to move forward on conveyance and the consideration through the Administrative Hearings Office of that request for conveyance permitting, as well as the site's reservoir permitting programs. So those continue. Those are all ex parte communications and hearings. So I can't talk a lot about them, but there's Those are all moving forward and a big focus of ours. Finally, I thought I'd mention that we did release a recirculated a portion of our draft staff report. That's the CEQA recirculation of a key chapter for the Bay Delta Plan update for the Sacramento and Delta parts. We are it is consistent with what we the proposal is consistent with what we released in July and includes the Healthy Rivers and Landscapes Program as well as a regulatory pathway. We are holding public workshops at the very last few days of January. There is public comments on the Chapter 13 and the proposed amendments are being solicited through February 2nd. And we are hoping that, or that the intention is that this then puts us on track for adoption of an updated Bay Delta plan in 2026, in this coming year. I forgot to mention last thing is that we did return another subbasin, the Kuya subbasin, to DWR under SGMA. So a lot going on, a lot coming up in 2026. We're hoping that we get some rain. The aquifers, but also the reservoirs are all in good shape going into the year. But we are hoping that we get more precip and snow so that we don't find ourselves in throughout this coming year. I think it looks good. And with that, I think I just look forward to January. Hopefully I can participate in the retreat. And I wish you all happy holidays.
Thank you. Thank you very much. As always, a thorough and very informative report. So appreciated. Let me ask board members if there are any questions for board member Firestone.
Just one, actually a comment, and just to say thank you for informing us about the November 18th workshop on stormwater capture. I did not know about it, and I actually just signed up to the storms unit email list where I can be informed when other opportunities come up. So thank you for that, and I look forward to reviewing the workshop.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Also, just thank you about the letting us know about that and about all of the work that you're doing with regards to agriculture and the regenerative agriculture. Appreciate that. Great to see you. Happy holidays. And we do hope that you'll be able to participate as we set our priorities in the new year in January. Thank you.
Board Member Camacho.
Yes, for myself, just many thanks to you. Board Member Firestone, for all the work that you've provided, and I know things at the state are, as you had stated here, this is just like the tip of the iceberg in terms of what's going on. Thank you again for keeping us apprised on what's going on with the irrigated lands programs, and we're really looking forward to any document, final or final draft, that'll be coming out in January, and that we'll look at, you know, how that's going to, you know, affect the region. And in a positive way. And so thank you very much.
Right. And I'll add my thanks as well and just say that you know, that if there were a best board liaison ever award, I'm sure you would win it hands down. We so value and appreciate you and thank you for all of the work that you do on the board in Sacramento as well as your relationship with this board. Really so appreciate it. And I hope you have wonderful holidays with your family, and we'll see you next year, and would be wonderful if you could actually come to the board retreat like that. Okay. All right, that's it. Thank you so much. Okay, we'll move on now to public forum. Okay. Yes, thank you. All right. So item number 7 is public forum. So any person may address the board during regarding any matter within the board's jurisdiction, provided the matter does not appear elsewhere on this agenda, has not been scheduled to appear on a future agenda, and is not expected to be imminently scheduled for the board's consideration. We will now proceed with public forum. Each speaker will have 3 minutes, unless additional time is agreed to in advance, to address the board. Comments during public forum must be on items that are not pending or scheduled to appear on a future agenda and which are not otherwise on today's agenda. Regarding the order of speakers, first will be in-person speakers, second, those that have registered in advance to speak remotely, third, others participating remotely that wish to speak. After in-person speakers are concluded, those that registered in advance via the online registration form to speak remotely via Zoom will be asked to raise their Zoom hand. After those that have registered in advance have spoken, I will ask any others wishing to speak to raise their Zoom hands. So in terms of our in-person speakers, we have Mr. Ray Tahir, who's in person. We have Ms. Annalisa Moe from Gilda Bay. We have Mr. Walter Lamb, who's in person here. And so we will start with Mr. Tahir representing the Gardena Valley Democratic Club for 4 minutes. Good morning.
About now. Next slide, please. At the last board meeting, I was criticized for not complying with ex parte communication rules as it relates to the CII permit. Specifically, I sent comments to Chair Nahai and Vice Chair Astian, which they believed were impermissible according to Water Code Section 13287. Actually, my comments did not violate ex parte rules for the following reasons. First, 13287 is invalid. As I informed the State Board at the last meeting, Chief Counsel Laufer erred by adding a heading section without approval from the legislature or his board, which was illegal. Next, it is also illegal due to vagueness. Although it references enrollment permits, it does not determine what enrollment permits are. According to American constitutional law, a statute may be void for vagueness and unenforceable if it is too vague for the average citizen to understand what acts or duties are required or restricted. Next slide, please. According to Regional Board staff 13287, comments regarding the CII permit, which is considered an enrollment permit, are prohibited 14 days before the public hearing. But according to 13287, the prohibition may be prohibited within this time. The board did not indicate who determines may, the regional board or its staff. I sent Ms. Astian slides from several presentations I made to the state board asking Chief Counsel Laufer to explain if I am subject to ex parte communication under 13287 as it relates to enrollment permits. He did not respond. And in any case, of course, the matter is moot because 13287 is invalid. Next slide, please. More about the CII permit. The permit is constitutionally vague because it does not define commercial, industrial, and institutional facilities. 5-acre-plus properties that are intended to be subject to the permit are required to pay a Measure W stormwater tax at a rate of 2.5 cents per square foot on impervious surfaces. The tax revenue, municipal permittees, the tax revenue pays for municipal permittees to fund projects, infrastructure, and programs to capture, treat, and recycled stormwater runoff, including runoff from private CII permittees, resulting in a redundant regulatory requirement that constitutes a double tap. Next slide, please. At the last board meeting, I asked that the water quality standards, objectives, and water quality criteria column in the table below be completed. Staff has not responded. Because I requested this information, the board is obligated to provide it. If board staff can't, it needs to say, be honest and say so. Note that the regional board's October 10th letter to Norwalk Mayor Rios' September 9th, 2024 letter did not touch on the fact that receiving water monitoring data were not measured as exceedances of water quality standards and water quality objectives. The reason they were not is that many of these standards and objectives were not adopted. This is a clear violation of the Clean Water Act. The regional board attempted to sanitize the issue by claiming that the lower San Gabriel River and other reaches are subject to water quality criteria. This argument is flawed because, one, water quality criteria were never adopted. Two, water quality criteria is only a factor in determining water quality standards and for CTR toxins. And three, receiving water monitoring data was not measured against water quality criteria. Unless the board can indicate on that on the column that it had or hadn't been exceeded. Next slide, please. Now, here's the table, the matrix that I provided to you before. Note that there's been no response. The columns that indicate water quality standards, objectives, and criteria exceedances have not been provided. And once again, they can't be because you never adopted them. Finally, as I mentioned under Bagley Keene, the board is obligated to provide the requested information. Again, if it doesn't have the information, which the state board has admitted, then it needs to say so. Thank you very much. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Okay. In person. Okay, yeah, I have it. Thank you very much. Next, in person is Ms. Jolene Guerrero from the LA County, from LA County Public Works, for 10 minutes, speaking on Adventure Park Stormwater Capture Project.
Good morning, Chair Nahai and members of the board.
Good morning.
My name is Jolene Guerrero, and I'm an Assistant Deputy Director with Los Angeles County Public Works. I'm responsible for compliance with the MS4 permit, a role I took over from Mark Lombos, who retired earlier this year. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here to briefly share information about the Adventure Park Multi-Benefit Stormwater Capture Project, which was completed this year. Thank you. Adventure Park is located in the Upper San Gabriel River watershed in unincorporated Whittier. The project was implemented from the approved watershed management plan and contributes to the MS4 pollutant reduction goals for the watershed. The site was selected because of its large footprint and the potential for multi-benefit development and its favorable location adjacent to Sorensen Drain Flood Channel. Next slide. The project team participated in and hosted many community engagement events during the planning, design, and construction phases of the project. The events not only served as an opportunity to educate the community on the importance of stormwater management, but also to solicit feedback on improving park amenities. Although improving park facilities increased the project costs, these efforts helped garner the community support and increased our eligibility for grant funding. Next slide. This slide showcases the extensive stormwater capture system we installed beneath Adventure Park. Stormwater flows are diverted from Sorensen Drain channel, pre-treated, and are stored in the underground storage reservoir. The reservoir has a capacity of 19.5 acre feet. Water is then pumped out of the reservoir and into a sanitary sewer line for further treatment and reuse within the sanitary sewer system that includes recycled water as one of its reuses. We're proud to note that this is Public Works' first high-volume stormwater capture project to connect to a sewer line. Typically, for high-volume projects, we opt for infiltration. However, due to high groundwater levels, we had to pursue a solution that still allowed for water supply benefit, which we achieved by collaborating with LA County Sanitation Districts. Next slide. This project integrated nature-based solutions for stormwater management, including a vegetative bioswale and drought-tolerant landscaping and trees. We also added new park features, including a new seating area, educational signage about the project, and new drinking fountains. Lastly, we restored and enhanced existing park features, including refencing the baseball fields, resurfacing the parking lot, renovating the park restrooms, and replacing old exercise equipment. Development of these features involved planning and coordination with LA County Department of Parks and Rec. The improved park spaces also reflect the needs of the community, who expressed their thoughts at multiple outreach events during the planning and design phases of the project. These improvements benefit the constituents in the immediate area as well as the surrounding disadvantaged communities. Next slide. One of the challenges that arose in designing this project was the high groundwater beneath the park. In addition to precluding water infiltration as a design strategy, it complicated the installation of the underground components and required the installation of a temporary groundwater treatment system to pump out groundwater and funnel it through a perchlorate treatment system. Next slide. Project construction costs were $28 million, with funding from Caltrans and the Safe Clean Water Program covering about 75% of that cost. This project had a timeline typical of water quality multi-benefit projects, which takes 7 to 10 years from start of planning to project completion. Projects like Adventure Park require a substantial commitment of time and funding, as well as the support of partnerships. Next slide. This project's many partners include Caltrans, Department of Parks and Rec, the LA County Flood Control District, the Safe Clean Water Program, and the County Sanitation Districts. Next slide. This project provides a long list of benefits, including enhancing 5 acres of park area for the nearby disadvantaged community, improving stormwater quality and watershed health through pollutant removal. The project held a groundbreaking ceremony at the start of construction in February of 2023, and the park was reopened with a ribbon-cutting ceremony in June of 2025. Lastly, the project employed a unique design and initiated partnerships with various entities, which will provide a framework and lessons learned for future projects. And last slide. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to sharing more about the county's many efforts to improve water quality in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Do you have questions for Ms. Guerrero? Go ahead.
No questions, just very impressed by the multi-benefit project and looking forward to seeing how everything unfolds. So thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you again and for coming here today and taking the time to inform us of one of the amazing projects you're doing throughout the county, particularly an area that needs green space. And I just had one question, particularly maybe just for my own education. How, when you define multi-benefit project, what are the multiple benefits that are included in this particular project besides stormwater capture?
So these are include the community benefits, the park amenities that were enhanced, including educational signage, drinking fountains, all of the things I mentioned. So park amenities in this case is the multi-benefits.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, because extreme heat's a big issue, is extreme heat ever included as a, sort of a added amenity, I guess, as a...
It is, as you green, as there's more greening. As you, yeah, wherever we can remove pavement, it's definitely one of the objectives where we can add nature-based solutions. Okay. Is definitely an emphasis in our projects.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you. Board Member Camacho?
Yes, really congratulations on this successful project. And our hope is that you come back again and also let us know how, you know, operation and maintenance of this facility moves along. And it'll be also curious to know in terms of staffing of this facility, what type of staffing resources were needed, and you know, and also another thing that we would be very curious in is in monitoring as well, in terms of how this facility has actually performed in terms of providing the, you know, decrease in or the meeting the MS4 requirements, I should say. And so it'd be good to see that nexus as well. So looking forward to more in the future. Thanks.
I absolutely can come back and present on those items. Be happy to.
No, thank you. Well, you want to be careful here. We'll have you come back again and again. And
I'm very excited about the program. I'm very excited to share everything we're doing.
So
happy to come back.
So the couple of questions, if I may. So the $28 million for the project, how much of that is Measure W money? How much of that was approved through the Measure W process?
You know what? I don't have that table. I know between Caltrans and Measure W, it was 75% of it, but I would have to provide that. I don't have it off the top of my head.
All right, thank you. And also, and as part of the project, there are water diversions that are happening. So why is that? Why is that necessary? What is happening to that water that is being diverted? Can you answer that for us?
Okay, so on this project, dry weather and wet weather are treated differently. So dry weather goes through a pretreatment, goes into the 19.5 acre foot. Then it goes through water polishers, and dry weather flows are returned to the channel. Wet weather flows are diverted to the LA County Sanitation Districts, to their Los Coyotes Reclamation Facility, which includes recycled water. They have recycling at that. We like to infiltrate where we can, but groundwater was only 22 feet deep at this site, so infiltration was just not an option.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for coming and presenting. We appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next. Thank you, Helen. All right. Next, we will hear from Ms. Annalisa Mauve from Heal the Bay for 10 minutes, speaking on the River Report card. And thank you. This is like the second part of your presentation. Thank you for agreeing to split it across two board meetings.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for the time. I haven't been here in person for a minute, so I'm assuming this is how I move slides back and forth. We'll try. Yeah, thanks, everybody. My name is Annalisa with Heal the Bay. As Chair Nahai just pointed out, I was here a couple of months ago to talk about the 2024 to 2025 Beach Report Card, so I'm here today to talk about the 2024 River Report Card. Not where I point exactly. Okay, so our River Report Card doesn't quite have the same history as our Beach Report Card, but we did start in 2017, so we're building that history. Initially, we had sort of a stoplight style grading system, which was green, yellow, red, but we convened a technical advisory committee and created an A through F grading system very similar to our Beach Report Card to sort of align those processes and launched that new grading system in 2023. We had a very successful launch, and so we are now looking to go back all the way to 2017 and regrade using that historical data, but with the new grading methodology so that we can compare year over year. So that is one thing that we're looking to do in 2026. And for our River Report Card, same, you know, for our Beach Report Card, we say a day at the beach should never make anyone sick. Same thing, a day at the river should never make anyone sick. So we do want to promote safe water practices and reduce the risk of exposure to contaminated water. We're able to provide water quality grades for 35 freshwater sites across Los Angeles through our River Report Card, and the 2024 annual report is based on summer 2024 data. We are able to provide grades at 35 sites in part due to publicly available data that is provided by LA Sanitation through the LA River Monitoring Program and the San Gabriel River Regional Monitoring Program. Heal the Bay also monitors 12 sites ourselves, but this additional data from participating agencies allows us to do a lot more. Again, we are reporting on summer 2024 data, so this first snapshot is pre-fire data entirely. And just to go over some of the big trends that we saw in this year's report that was released earlier this year, are, you know, things that we've seen in the past in the upper watershed, especially where there's open space, we see fairly good water quality. In the lower watersheds, primarily, you know, our sites are in the LA River watershed there, where we have six sites. Some of them are close together, so it looks like four, but there's six in there. Water quality is very poor. And then in the middle, where we have our recreational zones in the LA River watershed, there's sort of a mixed bag. That trend we see again and again each year. But looking at 2023 compared to 2024, we saw this really weird dichotomy where water quality improved dramatically in those recreational zones in Sepulveda Basin and Elysian Valley. But water quality actually got worse in the lower LA River area. 2023, we had sort of a mix of F and D grades, but 2024, it was Fs across the board. And even just looking at the percentages on those F grades, water quality declined. So we don't know entirely what's going on there. There could be like some improvements in some part of the watershed because of the drier conditions we had in 2024, but maybe in other areas like the lower LA River, land use plays a much bigger impact on what water quality looks like. Between our beach report card and our river report card, we did see some overall trends that, again, like on average, overall water quality improved. That's likely linked to a drier year. And what that tells us is that we have gotten pretty good at managing dry weather flows and those smaller storms. But again, there's still more we need to do to prepare for the larger storms in the wetter years. And of course, we still have persistent hotspots. So even in dry weather, there is a lot more we can still do in those problem spots like the lower LA River to manage our dry weather flows. Oh. That's all right. So next, I want to tell you all a little bit about what we saw this year. Because I'm presenting this information so late in the year, we actually have another summer worth of data. That report is going to be coming out in May of 2026, so I'm happy to come back and talk about it more then. But I knew that there might be some questions today, so I wanted to share at least some initial thoughts as we start to dig into those data. And first of all, I do want to share that we have our stream team. That's how we're able to monitor 12 sites. That program was partially funded by the SET program this summer. So I wanted to share just a little bit about the workforce development aspects of our program as well. We were able to hire 12 stream team associates and one stream team coordinator. These are students or recent graduates in the Los Angeles area, and we are able to provide workforce development opportunities with experience, training, mentorship around field work, collecting water quality samples, testing for bacteria and turbidity, lab work, lab analysis, and then also the science communication and community engagement piece that Heal the Bay is really well known for. So students are able to participate in all of this throughout the summer. Now, this is the snapshot of our River Report Card website from the last week of sampling. So this was the end of September. These are not annual grades, but I will tell you they're pretty reflective of what we saw throughout the summer. And some of the basic trends are still there. We have good water quality up in the open space areas, particularly above the burned zones. We have poor water quality at the lower parts of the watersheds, and then we have sort of mixed grades in between. So that's similar to what we've seen in the past. A couple of things that I want to mention is that in addition to that like year over year analysis that we're going to do now that we have this new grading system, we're also going to be diving into, are there any potential impacts from the wildfires? So those are some of the initial thoughts I want to share with you. One thing is we did add a site this past year at Malibu Lagoon, and we do see water quality decline there. Our two sites in the upper Santa Monica watershed area are above the area there that burned as part of the Palisades fire. And Obviously, we do see water quality decline by the time we get to the lagoon, but there's a lot of different factors at play there. The lagoon was flowing at the beginning of the summer, but that berm closed partway through the summer, so there's stagnation. There's also a large bird presence in the area. There's also potential for on-site septic systems in the area causing problems. So that's not something that we can like directly link to the wildfires, but we are going to continue to kind of look and try to parse that out. I think some of the most interesting pieces are in the LA River watershed. Once again, we see Fs across the board in the lower LA River area. And again, if we look at the percentages compared to 2024, once again, we saw a decline. So there's definitely a decline in water quality in that area. That also could have multiple factors at play because when we look at the recreational zones in Elysian Valley and Sepulveda Basin, we're also seeing a decline compared to last year. And those areas are not directly hydrologically connected to either of the large fire areas. So we'll have to parse that out a bit as well. But one thing I do want to zoom in on is some of the areas where we had a site in the past that was no longer accessible because of the fire. And the one example I'm going to talk about today is Eaton Canyon. So this is an area where the point higher up, the sort of grayed out point on the map, that's the Eaton Canyon site where we did have monitoring in 2023 and 2024. And it was pretty much always an A+. Sometimes it dipped to an A, but consistently very good water quality. And the first thing we see here is that in addition to all of the myriad immediate impacts of the Eaton fire, we are also seeing this additional impact of loss of access to high quality recreational areas. The LA monitoring group did not have access to that site this year, so they chose a site further down in Eaton Wash. And if we go to the next slide, we're missing one. Go back one. The site further down was frequently an F grade, but never higher than a C. And again, there's multiple factors here. It's not directly comparable because it is a different site. This is a little further down. There might be some urban inputs, but they are fairly close within the watershed. And so we're going to be diving into, what else could have made this big change from an A+ site to a CDF site within kind of this short distance in the upper LA River watershed. These are some of the things we're going to be diving into. I'm happy to come back and tell you more when we've had more time to do data analysis, but I wanted to share some of these just very initial findings with you. And last is just more information if you want to get involved. Again, I think the Water Board for the partial funding that was specifically for the lower LA River area. And I'll just mention that that is a spot where Heal the Bay is the only organization doing weekly sampling during the summer in the lower LA River. So it's really critical to, for us to continue that work. And the regional board or the state board helped that through the Rose Foundation and the SEP program this year. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sure we do have some questions for you. We'll start with Board Member Mendez.
Thank you again for this data and science-driven analysis of the rivers in our region. And can you define the geographic region of the lower LA River, just to be clear?
Yes. The first site that we consider the lower LA area for our sampling, I believe, is at the Willow Street, the park that's there.
That's in Long Beach, or?
No. I'm blanking on the city name. I apologize, but there's the Willow Street Park is what we call
it. Okay, I'll look it up.
Yeah.
And that's the lowest part that you sample, and then a little further down?
Yeah.
Or? Okay.
Yeah. All right, I apologize. The one further up might be Riverfront Park.
Okay. And then question about the Altadena. It's quite interesting. I know you have more analysis. But what do you have an idea? What were the major pollutants that you did see that were contributing?
For the river report card, we are just looking at bacteria. And for the state of California, that is the based on E. coli primarily. When we go out and test at our sites, so for the lower LA River sites, we also test for temperature and turbidity. The only data that we receive from the LA River monitoring program and the San Gabriel River monitoring program are those E. coli levels.
Okay, great. Thank you again. We look forward to seeing you present on this in either spring or summer. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you for pointing out the STREAM team that was funded by partially by the SEP program. It's really nice to see both for a continued education perspective and a workforce development perspective. So that was really nice to hear. Thank you. And thank you for presenting to us. As usual, we really look forward to hearing from you and hearing about the good work that your team is doing. So thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate the time to thank present you. It as well.
Board Member Camacho.
Again, I want to extend my appreciations as well. These reports are very timely and also very informative, and also points into areas in which we need more research and guidance. And so look forward to seeing what your team comes up with in terms of looking at the results that you do get and the analysis that comes out of that and how that's going to help us overall with the regulatory aspect of our work for the future. So again, much kudos, and again, very happy to see the workforce development aspect included in this. And again, thank you for your multi-benefit approach to this project.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much as always for coming and talking to us, Ms. Bo. In your presentation, you referred to a number of problem spots, but then you also added that, if I quote properly, we're not quite sure what's going on there. Mm. I'm hoping that in the coming months, perhaps working with staff, we can try to find out what is going on there. Mm-hmm. And see how best we can tackle the problem spots that you've identified. But as with Hilda Bay's Beach Report Card, this is truly such a valuable asset. I know that the Beach Report Card is, you know, parents refer to it, you know, all the time before taking their kids to the beach. So it's a wonderful service, and we thank you.
Thank you. Yes, and I'm happy to work with staff to try and figure out. We also do collect some storm drain samples, particularly in the recreational zones in the upper LA River watershed. And one site that we have been collecting consistently is around where the Nature Conservancy is building the Botai Wetlands Demonstration Project. And we hope to work with them and your staff to see how putting in that project maybe helps with some of the dry weather flows there as well.
Okay, I'm having a bit of a running battle with this microphone here. I'm told that if I don't speak right into it, no one can hear me. If I keep it on, there's feedback. If I turn it off, I don't remember to turn it back on again. Anyway, this microphone is not my friend, but all right. So we'll move on to our next speaker, who is in person, who is Mr. Walter Lamb, for 5 minutes.
Thank you and good morning, Chair Nahai, board members, Walter Lamb, representing the Binding Wetlands Land Trust. I want to start off by saying how much we appreciate that there was a presentation today, right? Really all we're looking for is for that collaborative discussion and for things to move forward. I did also appreciate that the presentation included a photo from one of our restoration events that we do with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. That's a bright spot for us. We really enjoy being out in the wetlands. It's always what I would prefer to be doing, leading nature walks, field trips, pulling weeds. And I also appreciated the discussion from you, the recognition that this is important and that there needs to be more progress and more accountability for that progress. Again, that's exactly what we've been shooting for. So some of my slides today are happily no longer relevant, and that's always a good thing. But I did want to just make a few points, and I guess I didn't realize there was, I'm going to see if this works for me too. Oh, great. Oops, no, I want to go back there. Okay. Missing the middle slide here. Actually, there we go. Okay. Really just want to focus on this, which is the TMDL itself. And I do think it's important to separate conceptually the fact that there is a total maximum daily load for the bio wetlands, and then there's a project that may, if it ever gets implemented, may or may not implement nor achieve the targets of the TMDL. And it's important to separate those because the TMDLs are squarely under the regulatory jurisdiction of this board. And so I really did. I appreciated the discussion of wanting to help, and there was a lot of good discussion. I just want to highlight for you that it is you that does have the regulatory authority to develop an implementation plan. That's your responsibility. It's not Fish and Wildlife's responsibility. And I wanted to note, because I thought, Erin made a really good point, right? So a lot of this is what's happening predates her, so she's in a tough spot. I do want to note that she's been 100% improvement, not to be judgmental of her predecessor, but in 10 years, I never got her predecessor to call me back once. Erin and I actually talk fairly frequently. She does have an open door policy, and we really appreciate that. But I think even more importantly, the wetlands were listed as degraded prior to CDFW itself even taking over the property. And so I think a lot of times they just become, they get singled out as the punching bag. And it was never intended for them to be the solo agency on this effort. In fact, in the TMDL, there's 6 cooperative parties, including the Department of Public Works, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Caltrans, and there's a number of other entities like Heal the Bay, L.A. Waterkeeper, who have been involved in the discussions. And so we're really looking for this to be a community discussion. And so I want to throw out there, as you think of the discussions that you're going to have, we would love to participate. And I think one thing that we bring to the table sometimes is probably a source of frustration, is we've been around since 1994, and we've been really focused exclusively on the wetlands for 31 years. And so we have a lot of context that we can share that I think sometimes, as Erin mentioned, like she took over a couple of years ago, right? And so she's trying to figure out what some of these historical documents are. We'd love to share that, and we always like to do it in a collaborative way. So in terms of the regulatory authority to develop implementation plans, when you talk about timeline, that's really what we've been asking for, is just to put it in writing, like a schedule. We think that what that's going to do is a reality check, right? So we don't believe that it's just a matter of turning the next corner. The work that remains to be done for the NEPA side, and I appreciated Board Member Camacho bringing that up, it is much bigger than what needs to be done on the EIR side. Now, the EIR, originally, the plan after the litigation was all done was spring of 2024. And then it was spring of 2025. And now it may be spring of 2026 or sometime in 2026. So again, not trying to be negative, right? We're really glad that the discussion is happening and we want to move forward with it. We want you to understand what your role is and what you can do since you were talking about that. The other thing I do just want to point out is that NEPA and CEQA actually are meant to be done jointly. So it's actually not the case that it's normal to go through the entire CEQA process, and then when that's done, begin the NEPA process. Both NEPA and CEQA strongly encourage for those to be done jointly. And again, the reason that this is all important to us is, sea level rise is not on hold. The spread of invasive weeds up Biona is not on hold. So that's why when it maybe seems like we're being impatient, that's why this is important to us. So thank you again very much. Happy holidays to everyone and happy new year. And we'll touch base again in January. Thank you.
Thanks very much. We appreciate it. Those are all of the in-person speaker cards that I have. So we can now move to our remote participants for public forum. And the first name that I have is Jamie Slaughter for 3 minutes. Do we have Jamie Slaughter lined up?
Chair, I don't see her online.
Not?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
The next name that I have is Ms. Kathy Knight. For
yes.
3 minutes. Okay, for 3 minutes. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I'd like to show the video that I sent in.
It's for 3 minutes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Please go ahead.
Okay, I sent in a video that, a 1 minute video to show.
Possible maybe to ask Fish and Wildlife to kind of put them on the agenda to see what progress has been made sometime next year in 2025, just so that we know if anything has changed or if it isn't going to change. And if we don't see any movement in 2025, we should clearly understand that.
You know, Fish and Wildlife is pursuing funding on their own, and it's my understanding that they have not identified an alternative source of funding to do the work to recertify the EIR in response to the court order, but they are doing the work themselves now with their internal resources, I understand, and so I expect that they will recertify the EIR soon.
Soon, but we don't know when.
No, but I think we will know when. I think I can provide you a report at the next board meeting as to the schedule of when that might happen.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I think we would appreciate hearing an update on that.
Okay. Thank you very much. I just wanted to just see, you know, how long it's been going on waiting for this. I'm really glad to see that there's interest, not only interest, but, you know, work towards restoring the biennial wetlands. And I want to thank you for that update. And so I'm with the Biona Ecosystem Education Project. We've been working on saving the biennial wetlands for over 30 years. And we're looking forward to working with you on this. And also, I think we should also look at sea level rise on this issue. So again, thank you. And that's all I have to say for now. I just looking forward to it so much, restoring it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much for your presentation. Are there any other remote participants with hands up in the Zoom universe? No, seeing none? Okay.
Not that I'm seeing.
All right. Well, then we will now conclude the public forum, and we will move on to the next item on the agenda, which are our uncontested items. But before we do that, let me ask board members if anybody would like a break, or shall we continue? We're up. Okay. We're good to go. Okay. Next, we're going to move on to uncontested items. All right, these items, let me first say that any board member or person may request that an item be removed from the uncontested calendar. If an item is removed from the uncontested calendar, it would only be voted on at this meeting if the board accepts the staff recommendation for the item. Otherwise, the item will be continued to a future meeting to allow input by interested persons. I'm not seeing...
Oh, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
I just wanted to flag that there's actually a change sheet for item 9 because there was a typographical error. It doesn't need to be removed from consent, but I just wanted to describe what the change sheet encompassed. Staff inadvertently deleted an existing requirement from the monitoring and reporting requirements related to the blended advanced water treatment monitoring that's required by Title 22. It's been ongoing monitoring, and there was a table that said what monitoring to do. And so if the when the item is adopted, if we could adopt it with the change sheet.
Thank you. We do have it.
Perfect. And there's also a copy of the change sheet at the front if anyone would like to review it and has any comments. But...
Okay. All right. The items on the uncontested items are items 8, 9, and 10. And Ms. Nunes, I presume I should read the titles for each item?
Saying 8, 9, and 10 is sufficiently clear.
Okay, well, I appreciate that since the titles are rather long, down to, I don't know, dates of birth and... No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so we have items 8, 9, and 10, and I know that we have a couple of offers to speak if requested. I don't think there are any requests for additional responses. So I will ask for a motion and a second for the uncontested items, which are items 8, 9, and 10, and the motion should be to adopt the staff recommendation on these items.
So moved with the addition of the change sheet in number 9.
Thank you.
Second and agree with the changes.
All right. So we have a motion from Vice Chair Ashton and a second from Board Member Mendez. Could we have the roll call, please?
Vice Chair Ashton?
Yes, thank you.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, that concludes our uncontested items. So now we will move on to item number 11, which is our contested item. And these are, and I'm going to administer the oath in a second. This item number 11 is consideration of general waste discharge requirements for discharges of trash for non-point sources in water bodies subject to total maximum daily loads for trash. The comment submittal deadline for this item was November 6, 2025, and we'll be hearing from Dr. Elisha Wakefield on this item. And now I will administer the oath. So will everyone testifying on item 11 please stand and take the following oath? Okay. Do you promise that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Under penalty of perjury, please respond with I do or yes. Okay. All right, so then let's move on to our staff presentation. Thanks very much, Ms. Wakefield.
Good morning. Chair Nahai, members of the board, my name is Elijah Wakefield, and I'm the supervisor of the TMDL and non-point source unit. While I'd like to claim a PhD, sadly, I don't have one. Today, I'm presenting to you item 11, the proposed waste discharge requirements for discharges of trash from non-point sources within the Los Angeles region, subject to total maximum daily loads. Next slide, please. In the presentation, I will briefly provide some background information on the Los Angeles region trash total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs, and review the previous permit for non-point sources of trash. I'll then go over the components of the currently proposed waste discharge requirements, or WDRs, before the presentation concludes with a discussion of public comments and staff recommendations. Next slide. Trash is found in waters throughout the Los Angeles region and is long recognized as a significant pollutant in these waters. It adversely affects beneficial uses, impacting aesthetics, recreation, wildlife, and public health. The Clean Water Act requires TMDLs be developed for impaired waters not meeting beneficial uses. As part of that development, an impaired water body is evaluated to identify and quantify the sources of pollutant from both point sources, like a pipe, and non-point sources, which are more dispersed. Then the total load of the pollutant the water can receive and still meet water quality standards is calculated. In 2000, the Los Angeles Water Board was the first regional water board to adopt a TMDL for trash. This was the East Fork of San Gabriel River Trash TMDL. In the years that followed, an additional 10 TMDLs were adopted for other water bodies within the region. Source identification was conducted for each TMDL, and in most cases, point sources overwhelmingly dominated the contribution of trash. The non-point sources, while much lower in volume and extent, were also included in these TMDLs. The regional trash TMDLs have been in effect for some time. However, TMDLs are planning tools and are not self-implementing. To implement and enforce the allocations in TMDLs, a regulatory mechanism needs to be developed and adopted. The point source waste load allocations for trash were incorporated into the regional municipal separate storm sewer system, or MS4 permit. To implement the load allocations for non-point sources, A new regulatory tool had to be adopted. This led to the development and adoption of the 2020 conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for discharges of trash from non-point sources in water bodies subject to total maximum daily loads for trash, or the much smaller mouthful, trash waiver. The trash waiver required monitoring of water quality impacts caused by the deposition of trash and debris in specific locations previously specified in the TMDLs, and the waiver required collection of that trash to control those discharges and protect water quality. In accordance with California Water Code, a conditional waiver, like the trash waiver, may not exceed 5 years in duration, resulting in the expiration of the trash waiver on September 9, 2025. The 5 years is not a deadline for compliance by dischargers, just an expiration date for the regulatory order. To alleviate the administrative burden on staff resulting from the adoption of a new conditional waiver every 5 years and focus more time and resources toward implementation of the program, staff are recommending the conditional waiver permit be replaced with general waste discharge requirements. While waivers are a beneficial tool for new programs to come online as the requirements are evaluated, WDRs are a more permanent tool and do not automatically expire. You may remember that agricultural sources were regulated by multiple waiver terms from 2005 to 2023 before the board transitioned to WDRs. In this case, staff are proposing to replace the previous trash waiver with trash WDRs after only one waiver term. The non-point source program statewide is moving toward WDRs instead of waivers, and we are following that approach in the item before you today. Next slide, please. On screen is a map and a list depicting the trash TMDLs in the region. First on the list is the East Fork of the San Gabriel River Trash TMDL. That TMDL set precedent by being the first trash TMDL adopted by the state or regional water boards in California, and as one of the first in the nation. An additional significance of the East Fork San Gabriel River Trash TMDL lies in the translation of the narrative objectives included in the basin plan, which established a zero trash numeric target to protect aquatic and wildlife habitats and recreational uses. The zero trash numeric target applied to all subsequent TMDLs. The additional trash TMDLs that followed also contributed to regional and national efforts to address trash in waterways. For example, the Los Angeles River Trash TMDL addressed trash from the entire Los Angeles River watershed. It contained waste load allocations for point sources that required cities and municipalities to address discharges of trash from storm drains. This set the standard for trash in urban waterways nationwide. Looking at the map on the left, the colored areas show that a large part of the region is subject to a trash TMDL, covering watersheds in both Ventura and Los Angeles counties. A number of the TMDLs were revised between 2015 and 2022 to update requirements based on more recent data. Next slide. While the trash TMDLs blanket a large swath of the region, the proposed WDRs before you today are actually very narrow in scope. As mentioned, in the development of a TMDL, the sources of pollutant, in this case trash, are identified and quantified, and then the load is divided between point sources and non-point sources. In the case of trash, most of the loads are from point sources. However, specific areas in each of the trash-impaired water bodies were found to be impaired due to non-point sources, and those areas are the subject of the WDRs. On screen is an illustration of the limited focus of this effort. On the left is the same figure that was included on the previous slide. The largest area, symbolized in mint green, is the Los Angeles River watershed. While the entire watershed is subject to the TMDL, the figure on the right highlights those areas identified to have non-point sources of trash contributing to the river. These areas are depicted in dark green, and the names of the areas are listed. As you can see, the areas subject to the WDRs constitute very small, discrete portions of the watershed. most often parks and greenways along or adjacent to the river. These are areas where trash is directly transported into a water body without moving through a pipe. Next slide. I will now explain the non-point source load allocations in the trash TMDLs. The TMDLs require responsible entities to undertake iterative implementation of assessment and collection events and successive best management practices depending on the results of those events. Specifically, the responsible entities were required to first have an approved trash monitoring and reporting plan. The plan detailed the frequency, location, and reporting of monitoring and assessment events and included a metric such as weight, volume, or pieces to measure the amount of trash collected during each event. And the plan also needed to include a process for evaluation of the effectiveness of the responsible entity's efforts. The second requirement was to conduct minimum frequency of assessment and collection events, which included a visual assessment, physical collection, and process for the disposal of all trash gathered during collection events. The initial minimum frequency and locations of trash assessment and collection were specified in each TMDL. The trash TMDLs specify there shall be zero trash immediately following each MFAC or assessment and collection event. The third requirement was the implementation of best management practices, or BMPs. Each BMP program included an initial suite of practices to be implemented between assessment and collection events. The BMP program was to be revised to include additional BMPs to be implemented between collection events if results from the previous years, as reported in the annual report, showed that trash was not decreasing between collection events. The last major requirement of the waiver was the preparation of annual monitoring reports. These were to report progress from the previous year, detailing the quantification and measurement of each event. The reports document those reports documenting increased trash accumulation between monitoring and collection events were required to include a proposal for additional BMPs to be implemented between collection events, or alternatively, an increased frequency of collection events. The TMDL implementation plan language from each TMDL was incorporated into the 2020 trash waiver. Next slide. With the sunsetting of the trash waiver and development of a replacement permit in the queue, the functionality and data collected under the waiver were evaluated to try and answer the question, how successful was this program? Both responsible entity compliance and available trash data were examined, and the program was found to produce positive results and benefits, but with mixed levels of success. Responsible entities' compliance with the program's administrative tasks is mixed. A number of responsible entities have completed all the requirements, and some of them have been able to reduce their trash efforts in response to the data collected to date. There are some responsible entities that have not been in compliance with the order, and bringing them quickly into compliance will be a focus of staff following adoption of the order. The implementation portion of the Los Angeles Non-Point Source Trash Program is still fairly new, and long-term trends cannot yet be deciphered. However, in the review and evaluation of the trash waiver, a handful of hurdles to the program's success were identified, and provide some guidance on how the program could be improved with the new permit. The first challenge is the limited data available. As a new program, the waivers included startup tasks, which took time the first 2 years of adoption before annual reports could be submitted. So there's limited data available to evaluate the regional conditions of trash accrual from the non-point source areas. This limitation will naturally attenuate as more time elapses and data continues to be submitted. The evaluation also spotlighted several situational issues that affected full compliance by a number of responsible entities. Like with so many aspects of everyday life, the COVID-19 pandemic left its mark on the program. At the time of waiver adoption, the state was 6 months into the response to the pandemic. This had three main effects on the program. demand and utilization of outdoor spaces increased, resulting in greater amounts of trash pollution being generated, both from greater numbers of visitors and also from just more trash per visitor. For example, increased takeout containers and personal protective equipment. At the same time, there were reductions in park staff and cancellations of trash monitoring events. This led to a greater accumulation of trash and delays in monitoring reports. Wildfires also impacted trash efforts throughout the region, both by diverting staff involved in collection and assessment efforts, and at times shifting recreation space usage, resulting in increased pressures in some areas subject to the trash waiver. These events also hampered Water Board staffing dedicated to the program, limiting our ability to aid responsible entities in finding a successful compliance path. While pandemics and wildfires are punctuated and hopefully rare events, a programmatic element of the waiver was also identified as a compliance complication, and that is the usage of nomenclature in the non-point source permit that overlapped with language used in point source permits. Within the trash TMDLs, many point source and non-point source requirements use the same names and acronyms for their programs of implementation. In particular, trash monitoring and reporting plan and minimum frequency of collection. This led to confusion and is most likely a partial reason for some compliance issues with the non-point source trash waiver requirements. There were repeated incidents throughout the trash waiver where some responsible entities were unaware of the separate non-point source requirements, have included the non-point source reporting requirements as addendums to MS4 annual reports, or assumed they were following all requirements by only submitting those required by the point source waste load allocations. Therefore, to address these hurdles, staff recommends transitioning the waiver to WDRs. The overall approach of the program, which is the collection and disposal of trash at frequent intervals in combination with trash reduction BMPs, would remain the same in WDRs. Because this approach is specified in the TMDLs, we don't recommend changing it. However, we think that by transitioning to WDRs, staff will be able to more effectively enforce this approach and successfully implement the TMDLs. Next slide. While the overall approach of the proposed WDRs would remain the same, several administrative and reporting structural changes could be made to make the WDRs more robust, increase the transparency and efficiency of the program, and assist in greater compliance. Moving the permit from a conditional waiver to WDRs will allow more continuity without having to stop and renew every 5 years. Even with switching permitting approaches, most of the permit provisions of the waiver could be rolled over and continued. While the waiver specified a reporting deadline for annual reports, it did not specify the reporting period covered by that deadline. There was confusion among some groups about what period of time to use for the annual monitoring reporting period, and there were inconsistencies among the responsible entities about when the reporting period begins and concludes. It is recommended that the annual monitoring reports include data from the reporting period of July 1st through June 30th of the following year, with the reports due December 15th. This gives responsible entities 6 months to complete the analysis and prepare the narrative required in the reports. To be consistent with California's approach to data transparency, the Los Angeles Water Board staff recommended WDRs incorporate requirements for responsible entities to submit electronic data to the Los Angeles Water Board with each annual monitoring report. The data set would be submitted in a format compatible with the California Environmental Data Exchange Network. This would allow for easier analysis of data in the present and a possible upload of the data to the exchange in the future. Additionally, deliverables submitted in compliance with the trash waiver are public information. However, staff is barred from posting them online due to state accessibility requirements as mandated by the Americans with Disabilities Act, and staff cannot retroactively make the documents accessible after they've been submitted. Therefore, it's recommended that each report include an appendix with a report summary and data table that is compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act standards, so the deliverable can be posted to the Water Board website. Next slide, please. The final recommended changes are to update the nomenclature used for the program deliverables. In particular, the terms trash monitoring and reporting plan and minimum frequency of assessment and collection, which are names also used for MS4 deliverables. The deliverable themselves have not changed, but by clearly demarcating these as non-point source program components, it will assist in responsible entity compliance, water board tracking of compliance, and improve the public's understanding of the program and data. The language change recommendations are: the trash monitoring and reporting plan, or TMRP, would be retitled as non-point source trash assessment and reporting plan, or NSTARP. The minimum frequency of assessment and collection, MFAC, would be retitled as protocols for assessment and collection, PAC. The terms best management practices and annual monitoring report would remain the same, as these are more generic industry terms versus the trash-focused TMRP and MFAC. Next slide. The staff report and draft trash WDRs were released on October 7th, 2025. The documents were posted to the website, and a notice of public hearing and opportunity to comment were sent to all Los Angeles Region TMDL subscription lists. The comment period was October 7th. The comment period ran until November 6th, 2025. We received 23 submissions from individuals, non-governmental organizations, municipal leadership, responsible entities, and their consultants. Staff have reviewed the comments, have provided responses, and have revised the staff report in order to address the comments. And the revised documents and response to comments have been posted to the website. Next slide. The first comment to discuss was one that was submitted by a number of commenters. Commenters referenced continued trash impacts to Los Angeles River and other regional water bodies from the MS4 systems, and also referenced other non-point sources not included in the TMDLs. In response to this comment, the current order is very narrow in scope and only addresses the load allocations specified in the trash TMDLs. Trash impairments remain a major known issue for water bodies throughout the Los Angeles region. Upstream contributions of trash in the Los Angeles River are currently being assessed through the MS4 program for compliance and possible future steps. Next slide. Another repeated comment received was, why aren't cities bordering the Los Angeles River accountable for trash along the river? In response, as stated in the 2015 Los Angeles River Trash Team DL, cities along the Los Angeles River are responsible entities under the trash WDR for trash from parks, open space, and recreational facilities adjacent to or discharging to the river or a tributary. The cities of Arcadia, Bell Gardens, Burbank, Compton, Cudahy, Downey, Long Beach, Los Angeles, Maywood, Montebello, Pasadena, Pico Rivera, and Rosemead are specifically named in the Los Angeles River Trash TMDL and are subject to the proposed order in section 10.16.A. In response to comments, on December 12, 2025, a revised version of the proposed order was released that added Appendix 1. Appendix 1 is a table of the same list of responsible entities already called out in the order and the corresponding specific areas in the Los Angeles River watershed subject to the order. This table is directly from the Los Angeles River Trash TMDL and was previously incorporated into the order by reference. The table has been added in its entirety for clarification purposes, but does not add any additional responsible entities to the order. Next slide. The original draft of the proposed order included the requirement for all responsible entities to submit a new monitoring and assessment plan, the intention of which was to standardize the nomenclature and the reporting updates across all plans and responsible entities. Several commenters asked for the ability to reaffirm the existing plans as equivalent to a new plan, as was allowed under the trash waiver. In response to the comments, the order has been updated to allow responsible entities to reaffirm a monitoring and reporting plan that was previously approved by the Los Angeles Water Board. For those responsible entities that choose this option, they must submit a letter attesting to the reaffirmation and requesting the existing plan stand as an equivalent document. The letter must also affirm responsible entities will utilize the updated nomenclature terms in all future non-point source trash annual reports and correspondence required for compliance with the proposed trash WDRs. The letters must also add the additional requirements of the proposed trash WDRs, which are the reporting periods and deadlines, document accessibility requirements, and electronic data submission requirements. Responsible entities that choose to reaffirm an existing approved plan must also attach a copy of the existing monitoring and reporting plan and approval documents related to the plan. Next slide. The proposed trash WDRs released for public comment originally also included a requirement for responsible entities to submit electronic data to the Water Board and upload it to the state data exchange portal. Several commenters stated it is unclear how to use the portal to document trash monitoring and collection areas and expressed concern this process does not appear to have a protocol or guidance to delineate monitoring areas and has largely only been used to designate habitat areas previously. Additionally, commenters felt it was unclear if visual assessment data can be easily provided to the portal in a compatible format. Additionally, commenters were concerned identifying methods for submitting trash monitoring areas will substantially increase reporting costs and the lack of clear guidance poses a risk of noncompliance. In response to the comment, the requirement to submit data to the portal has been removed from the proposed trash WDRs. Instead, responsible entities will need to submit with their annual monitoring reports an electronic version, such as Excel, of any quantitative data collected, including but not limited to date and location of sampling and pounds or volume of trash. The data would be submitted in a portal compatible format. Responsible entities have already been collecting and submitting this data in narrative form in annual monitoring reports, usually in PDF format. So the additional requirement should not necessitate minimal additional resources. Next slide. The proposed trash WDRs released for public comment also included the requirement for the annual reports to be fully disability accessible compliant. Several commenters expressed that the trash TMDLs and the annual reports for them rely heavily on photographic evidence to demonstrate site conditions, such as images of individual trash items measured against a ruler or on a dark background. While alternative text descriptions are important for accessibility, providing detailed alternative text for each photograph in these contexts may significantly increase reporting costs without proportionally enhancing public understanding or access. The commenters also stated the Los Angeles Water Board should adopt a reporting framework that supports accessibility in a meaningful and cost-effective manner, particularly for documentation types where alternative text may provide limited additional value to the public. The substantial cost for developing compliant reports should also be included in the cost analysis of the draft WDR staff report if it was to be kept. In response to the comment, the proposed trash WDR's accessibility requirements have been updated. Each annual monitoring report will be required to include an accessible summary report synopsis that includes a brief narrative of the major results of the annual report and a data table. Photographic evidence required by the report does not need to be submitted in accessible format. The summaries would allow staff to post the data on the website, which in turn would aid the public awareness of what information is available. The full reports could be furnished by request. Next slide. That concludes the overall presentation of item 11. The alternatives before you today are adopt the WDRs as proposed, adopt the WDRs with changes, or no adoption, which would leave no implementation program for the non-point sources of trash specified under the TMDLs since the waiver expired last September. The recommendation is to adopt the WDRs as proposed. Thank you.
Thanks very much. If there are no questions for staff at this point, we'll move on to our speakers. So the first speaker is an elected official. I think is probably with us remotely, the Honorable Christina Duggan, Long Beach Council Member. Do we have her on Zoom? I don't know.
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, here we go. Yes, thank you.
Hello, good morning. My name's Christina Duggan. Hello, Chair and members of the Regional Water Board. I'm the council member for District 3 in Long Beach, and I represent the largest portion of Long Beach's city coastline. I want to start by thanking you for your leadership in the nation on the quality of water quality standards. Over the last 30 years, we've seen drastic improvements to our water quality in Long Beach because of your work. So thank you very much. Great presentation also. You know, at the same time, though, there's so much work to do. In Long Beach, our two biggest ongoing challenges are sewage spills and trash. And I have to note that today our beaches are closed because of a sewage spill, 18,000 gallons. It's happening right now, and this is disrupting people's lives. It hurts our economy. It's bad for our local environment. Long Beach really needs help as a downstream city. We experience the impacts of pollution and infrastructure failures that begin upstream, and our communities are paying for the consequences. Even with strong water quality grades most of the year, beach closures from sewage spills and visible trash have a lasting effect. It discourages people from enjoying our coastline. We strongly support the proposal to replace the expiring conditional waiver with general waste discharge requirements. And the amount of trash ending up on our beach is proof of the need to urgently reduce all sources of trash entering our waterways. The regional buy-in needed to address this issue starts with participation, transparency, and accountability. And I believe this proposal really encourages that. I understand non-point source trash is just one piece of the larger issue of trash entering our waterways, but my communities are truly demanding any change that will help the situation. So I'm asking this board to take on trash in our waterways and sewage spills with the same urgency as so many efforts to improve our environment. In just 2.5 years, we will be welcoming the world to watch athletes compete in the Olympics in these waters right here. So let's take advantage of this moment to make historic progress, not just incremental change. Thank you again for your leadership and for your continued partnership with Long Beach.
Thank you very, very much. I understand that your time is limited. I don't know if there are board member questions. Board Member Mendez.
Sure. Go ahead. Thank you, Council Member. It's a pleasure to have you here today and talk about the unique perspective of the city of Long Beach. I'm a Long Beach resident in the county.
Oh, wonderful.
Thank you. Council District next to you. I live less than a mile away from Bluff Park and the beach.
Yeah.
And utilize it, and I can attest to you the trash I see quite often on the beach, often from non-point sources. And oftentimes mm-hmm. when I have guests visiting, I won't take them close to the beach because I don't want them to see all the trash. But I commend you for voicing your concerns and being a partner with us here at the board, and hope we can work collaboratively with you and the city to address these issues, and starting off with this this item here today on non-point source trash. Thank you.
Thank you, Board Member Mendez. Come by anytime. I'd love to walk the beach with you. And thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to add thank you so much for your presentation and for many, many years. Long Beach has been the recipient of trash from upstream cities. And although I agree with you that much progress has been made, it's simply not enough. And I think that we will be talking about that a great deal more. And it's, this is one of the items that I hope that we will take up on our retreat in January, which is how to deal both with trash issues and other TMDLs that we've adopted, that we've actually perhaps even pioneered in this region, but which now need to be pursued and enforced where necessary. So it means a great deal that you've spent the time to speak with us today, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. And if I could just share one more point. I know this is from multiple sources. I'm really diving into learning more about this, but our beach maintenance has picked up 25 million pounds of trash off of our beaches in Long Beach over the last 4 years. So this really, point source, non-point source, these are important ways that we can help. So thank you again, Chair and Board.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's move on to, now I'm going to go to cards that we have for in-person speakers, and then I have another virtual speaker, and we'll come back to that. So next is Mr. Ray Tahir for 6 minutes.
Good morning again. Next slide, please. As I mentioned before, the board should not proceed with the non-point source trash TMDL waste discharge requirement for the obvious reason that it was revised only a few days ago and that the revision included new information and requirements that the public was not given the requisite 30-day review period. The waste discharge order revision, for example, calls for controlling MPS trash from the Los Angeles River, but does not specify any of the 6 reaches within this 55-mile-long water body. Other reasons for not proceeding are listed below. Agenda item 11 is titled Consideration of General Waste Discharge Requirements for Discharges of Trash from Non-Point Sources in Water Bodies Subject to the Total Maximum Daily Loads for Trash. The WDR should include order number R4-2025-XXX. There are definitional challenges. The WDR mentions a responsible entity as a designated group or agency assigned a waste load allocation or load allocation in the trash TMDL, which is zero, by the way, and required to comply with the allocation. The definition is vague and therefore cannot be enforced. It needs to be specific in terms of who the responsible entities are. Note, there's no mention of a responsible entity in Port of Cologne or the Clean Water Act. It appears that NPDES permittees could fall under this category, which would be problematic and would be duplicative. Next, including a responsible party assigned a waste load allocation infers a point source trash TMDL and appears to include MS4 and other NPDES permittees who would not welcome the proposed WDR they are already subject to, a point source trash TMDLs, and have implemented BMPs to address them. Next slide, please, is a duplicate. If the intent of the waste discharge order is to include MS4 and other NPDES permittees, it should be eliminated or face fierce challenge. There's no evidence of trash from a non-point source in the targeted water bodies. The water bodies specified in the waste discharge order need to show that trash from non-point sources is a problem. Providing pictorial evidence is needed. Next, the MS4 and other NPDES permittees are subject to point source trash TMDL BMP requirements, which should apply to non-point sources. These include debris screens on catch basins, frequent street sweeping, surface and receptacle trash removal at parks and other recreation areas, debris screens at most construction sites, and properly designed trash enclosures that prevent windblown trash from leaving the area. public education addressing the pollution problems caused by trash, and no dumping ordinances. LA County is also required to remove trash from their flood control channels before the start of any of the rainy season. For municipalities with large homeless communities, controlling trash from point source and non-point sources is a difficult problem that is not likely to be solved through the waste discharge order or even an MPDS permit. Next. It is understood the city of Redondo Beach has implemented BMPs to address non-point source trash DMDLs around its pier and other areas near ocean waters, but has done so voluntarily. The trash for RB4 is not mentioned in the state's 2020-2025 non-point source program implementation plan. Only two goals are mentioned. One, reduce the non-point source discharges from horse and intensive livestock facilities in the Ventura River watershed through WDRs, and a waiver of WDRs or other regulatory mechanisms. Secondly, reduce non-point source discharges from livestock sources in the Malibu Creek watershed through WDRs, waivers, or WDRs, or other regulatory mechanisms. Next, the proposed WDR includes cost considerations for responsible entities. There should be no cost burden for any discharger because of the MPS grant funding made available to the state under Clean Water Section 319 to fund projects that reduce NPS non-point source solution. Seems that the regional board is looking to fund trash controls using safe clean water funding instead. There will be opposition to this. Next. The proposed waste discharge order incorrectly requires compliance with code sections 13263 and 13241. 13263 merely requires implementation of relevant water quality basin plans and consideration of 13241. But 13241 does not apply to waste discharge orders, only to water quality objectives. Further, the trash TMDL has been adopted in Chapter 3, Water Quality Objectives of the Basin Plan, as a narrative rather than numeric objectives, and it does not differentiate between a non-point source and a point source. Next, note that Basin Plan Chapter 7, TMDLs refer to non-point trash TMDLs expressed as zero loading allocations. But Chapter 7 is a plan and has no regulatory authority. In fact, it is questionable as to why this chapter was even adopted. Other regional boards have not adopted similar chapters, only the RB4. Recommendation. Rewrite the waste discharge order based on input from a future workshop or even at the upcoming January retreat, or eliminate it altogether. Because a waste discharge order is a discharge permit, it is only logical that those who are subject to it should be referred to as dischargers, not responsible entities. Three, if the regional board intends to include the MS4 or other MPDS permittees as non-point source discharges, it should say so. However, the response from most of the permittees is likely to be that they are not subject to a non-point source requirement because they already are required to comply with point source TMDLs, which is addressed in the aforementioned BMPs. Should RB4 ignore this, administrative, legal, or political challenge is likely to follow, along with a claim to complying with a waste discharge order, non-point source TMDL, and its MS4 permit, point source TMDL, is another double tap because they both require the same TMDLs. And please don't use the term general order. As I mentioned to Chief Counsel Lopper, there is no such thing as a general order in state or federal law. Regarding Long Beach, what should be done? Put in a detritus net, the same kind of net that's in Biona Creek to trap the trash. It's a very cost-effective means of controlling trash. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Next. Okay. The next in-person presentation will be from Mr. Benjamin Harris from LA Waterkeeper.
Good morning, board members. Nice to see you again. My name is Benjamin Harris. I am a senior staff attorney with Los Angeles Waterkeeper, and I just wanted to comment quickly to express appreciation for this WDR. I think it's a really important step forward to help try to control our trash from non-point sources that are very nebulous and otherwise hard to track from a monitoring and data perspective. So this is a great step forward, very supportive of it. I wanted to raise one issue with the WDR and then a second comment that we also made in a triennial review comment letter about the solicitation of data. So on the WDRs, I did note that there were some comments about ADA compliance concerns, and especially from the responsible entities that have to submit reports. I think we're past a point where there should be any question about how to comply with the ADA. These governments should already know how to do this. They're mandated and have been mandated for many years to do this. So it doesn't really sit well with me when I hear concerns about how do we comply with ADA. It's going to be extra reporting requirements or costs. There's plenty of training out there to get these responsible entity staff caught up to speed on how to do this efficiently. We have new technology, AI tools that can do this. I don't think it's appropriate in the future, in other permits as well, to try to cater to these complaints about ADA compliance. We should achieve full transparency with all of the permits and reporting documents under these permits and WDRs moving forward. It should be on the responsible entities, the permittees, to do this. So I don't want to hear that anymore. They're going to maybe say those same complaints in the future, but I hope the board doesn't cater to those complaints and forces them to comply as they already should be under the ADA. And then the second comment is about how are we treating trash compliance, generally speaking? Because the way I understand this WDR to be styled is to meet existing trash TMDLs. And existing trash TMDLs set a zero trash objective under the TMDL. But the word objective is really critical here. The objective for zero trash should apply to every single waterway in the Los Angeles region. There's no reason why we have a zero trash objective just for places that have already been documented to have too much trash. Zero trash should be the goal everywhere. But we don't have water quality objectives that say zero trash. We have Chapter 3 that says no floating or settleable or solid materials that cause a nuisance or interfere with beneficial uses. But any trash interferes with beneficial uses, in my view. So as you'll see in our triennial review comment letter with Gila Bay, we're calling for the regional board to do a basin plan amendment that sets a specific water quality objective, numeric objective, for zero trash in all waterways. And that will help us streamline our trash compliance for cities like Long Beach that are suffering from the upstream pollution that they have to receive. And I know that's outside the scope of this WDR, but I just wanted to emphasize that now and looking forward to continuing the conversation about that. Thank you very much.
He's absolutely right.
Thank you very much. Next card is from Ms. Annalisa Moe from Gila Bay.
Hello again, board members. For the record, Annalisa Moe with Gila Bay. I would like to just start by sharing, you know, I spoke about the beach report card earlier, and that's something that Gila Bay is very well known for, but we're maybe even more well known for our trash cleanups. You know, there are weeks when we are out on the beach between community cleanups, corporate partner cleanups, public cleanups, 7 days a week on the beach cleaning up trash, and we have never not found trash when we're out on the beach. But we're also very lucky to be able to work with other local organizations to support inland cleanups and to run some ourselves. And I will also say that those inland cleanups very easily can be hundreds of pounds of trash in a single day removed from our environment. Trash is a huge issue here in Los Angeles, and it really does need to be tackled from every possible approach. And you know, we certainly know that point sources of trash are a significant issue, and storm drains in particular, but that is not the only way that trash moves through our environment. So you know, addressing the non-point sources at the same time is also incredibly critical. So we thank staff for moving forward with this. It does seem like the transition from a waiver to waste discharge requirements is only going to create, you know, more clarity and streamlining in the process, and also make things maybe a little bit easier on your staff members. And so I think that that is a good step to just help us move forward in tackling non-point sources of trash. As Mr. Harris mentioned, there's also more that we can do. So I think, you know, today we can approve these WDRs, we can move forward, continue to tackle that source of trash, and then continue to look at what's next. What's the next potential source of this trash pollution problem that we have in Los Angeles? And then I'll just finally provide some additional support for the requirement for reporting in a format that is ADA compliant. That's something that has hindered transparency in the past. So very excited to see that here and definitely support it being part of these waste discharge requirements, and also urge you to think about where else under your regulatory purview you can apply a similar requirement. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. I have two cards for virtual speakers. The first is Ms. Sarah Miles from LACSD. Do we have Ms. Miles?
She's not online.
She's not online, okay. The next one is from Mr. Gerald Green from CWE. Is he online?
He's online.
Okay.
And hopefully I can be heard.
Yes, we can hear you.
Very good. Thank you. It's the first time I've used this particular aspect of your services. First, I would like to comment that I do think board staff have tried to take into some of consideration some of the comments we provided. Having said that, I'd like to specifically request that the board consider that among us, we've already submitted several TMRP, several MFACs that board staff did not have the time or resources to review. And so you're essentially putting those of us who are in that situation of looking at our neighbors who had an approved TMDL by board, I'm sorry, approved plan, MFAC or TMRP by board staff. And now we are not benefiting having written several of them, provided them to board staff, sometimes repeatedly, and getting no response. So bottom line would be, I would encourage the board to either expand it to previously submitted TMRPs and MFACs, or direct staff to use the TMRPs and MFACs that we have submitted previously as a basis for providing comments, maybe an extended revision period to deal with this. Changing topics slightly, I would comment that I do not feel that we've had quite enough interaction. There's a lot of permittees. There's a lot of different TMDLs. I don't know that everybody has heard about the WDRs. And so I don't know that we'll come up with a way to answer your request directly. In other words, you know, we're still trying to figure out what we're doing. And I think a little more interaction with board staff to come to a commonality would be beneficial. I can appreciate the need for the ADA. I can appreciate going in that direction. I think there might need to be a transitioning period for that because, again, this has not been something that a lot of cities have done. We're going to have to figure out how to come up with a reporting method that is both acceptable to the board, but then can also be put into an ADA reporting format that can be used by the public. Finally, again, just kind of a more general term, I understand board staff have limited resources. We have the same issues, but I feel like we need to encourage you to encourage your staff to complete some of the outstanding issues. I mentioned the submitted TMRPs and MFACs a moment ago. There's also many IGP non-filers that cities have turned in. For one of city I represent, we've turned in like 120, and less than half have been pushed into the program over the last 6 years. They're still non-filers, even though the referral was made. Low bacterial load reduction studies, 10 years old, not approved. So rather than bringing in new topics for your staff, we would encourage them to be able to have the time and resources to complete the things that you've already assigned to them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Green. Thanks for your presentation. Has Ms. Miles reappeared? No?
Okay. No, Chair. No, hi.
Thank you. Any other virtual speakers?
That's all we have.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Thank you. Okay. So we'll move on to board questions and deliberations. And thank you for coming back to the podium. Who would like to start? Vice Chair?
The only question that I have is with regard to the comments that were just made by the last speaker, Gerald Green. I was unclear if he was mentioning that they made a public comment as one of the 23 letters that were received and wasn't responded to. And if so, were there any other... Well, I couldn't tell exactly what the comment was that... that he was referring to had not been responded to. I wanted to make sure that the public has had enough time to reach out and be responded to. Hopefully that makes sense, Alicia.
Yeah. Mr. Green did submit a comment letter, and we responded to it. It's included in the board package. I'm pulling that up right now.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Vice Chair Ashian, while she's pulling up the location of the comment letter and our response, I'll just speculate what I heard Mr. Green saying referred to several programs and several submittals by under various cities he represents that have not been...
Other programs, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. And that's what I thought.
Yes.
And I was going to follow up on that later with staff, but that was what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure for today there was nothing else.
Yes, he was also referring to... reports submitted under the previous waiver, but not his comment letter.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Board Member Mendez.
Oh, thank you. And if I could some clarity on what cities is Mr. Green representing?
If you don't mind, Board Member Mendez, we could ask Mr. Green. He's still in the Zoom room.
And the response comments started on page, my glasses work great for my written stuff in the screen, but not so great for the computer, and it's really small. Give me just a moment.
And Mr. Green, I think I see he's still on, if you're able to unmute yourself and provide.
I have done so. I was just letting Alicia finish her statement. I'm not... sure how best, so I'll do my best to try to answer your question. We have submitted TMRPs multiple times on the request of the Los Angeles River Upper Reach 2 Watershed Management Area. We have submitted MFACs on the behalf of the City of Rosemead. We are also currently representing the City of Montebello, but they did not ask us to particularly speak on this question, but they will have to be preparing an MFAC. I'm sorry, change in terminology and nomenclature is so much fun. You get the gist. We've helped several people in developing these documents, but now it appears that we'll have to rebuild them and redo the work because the board staff was, didn't have the resources to go back and approve it or provide revisions. And again, that might be addressed best by directing staff to provide comments and revisions to help us get to that same point, perhaps an extension in the submittal deadlines. I guess this is a slightly extension of what I said before.
Sure.
Very busy time for us right now. We just submitted our annual reports to you. We have to do MPT expenditure reports. We're going to have to be doing MPT, Safe Clean Water Municipal Program budget reports shortly.
Sure.
We have to be submitting
Thank
a lot you. Of things on our platter. Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Green. I guess my other, I guess if maybe a little bit more response on the comments back to him. I understand people are juggling multiple requests from our board, but that's the nature of being a regulated entity, but to the extent of how much we're able to provide feedback and responsive comments.
I can address that. But in your package, I did want to point out the response to comments start, I think, on page 90. Mr. Green's letter is on page 170, if you're interested in his specific comments.
What was the heading for? I think I just must have missed his letter.
Is
And I'll pull it up right now. Sorry.
It's CWE, and the heading was...
Thank you. Got it. Okay. CWE is great. Thank you. Thanks.
Okay.
There were a handful of plans that came in that were... Responses were written, and they were not sent out. In some cases, they were approvals, and in some cases, they were not approvals because they did not meet the requirements. Originally, in realizing that the conditional waiver, you know, we looked at maybe a year or so ago, a year and a half ago, we looked at the fact, okay, the waiver is going to expire. We have some work we want to finish up, including responses to those letters and things like that. And so we were originally planned to extend the waiver so that we could address those things. As I mentioned in the presentation, COVID impacts to our staffing were significant. I think we had 4 separate staff people work on this program in 5 years, and we were short staff for some of that. So we knew we had some things to get out, and the idea was we would extend the waiver so that we could address those. And we were getting ready to start that work in January, and the fire occurred, and that took additional resources and it took focus. And we did not have the bandwidth to extend the waiver because that requires not a full adoption, but it's a pretty lengthy process. And we wanted to make sure that this was not left unregulated. So we put staff resources on getting out a replacement for the waiver. And that's what's before you. So there are a handful of letters that are ready to go out that the report, the plans did meet the requirements. We have them queued up for management and they can be sent out. There are some that were deficient. And for those, our plan was already to work with those entities and provide the comments. You know, we want compliance. We want non-point source in particular is more, I feel, almost a collaborative nature. It requires it. So we did lose our trash person in October, but we have a new staff person who is really enthusiastic and very engaged and has already started taking on those tasks. And so that, once we get through today, that was part of our next steps, was to get those letters out. And for those that had a plan that was submitted that was not sufficient, that we could provide guidance and work with them to get something in. And it shouldn't require, I don't have the details in front of me in terms of what the deficiencies are, but for a lot of the agencies and the entities were worried when we said, you need a new plan. You know, we thought everybody clear, we'd get a new plan. They're like, oh my gosh, you're going to make us do all this work. And our intention was, you know, for those that are approved, let's just get it updated, you know. But we had discussions on that. So I think the existing letters would be a really good place to get those conversations going. And we think we could quickly address it with agencies and entities, responsible entities.
And I don't know if you were...
Go ahead.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
okay.
No, I'll go after you.
I just wanted to say I do appreciate and agree with the move to a WDR instead of a conditional waiver and allocating the staff resources to that, and to make sure that we didn't end up in a situation where we were in a long period of no regulation. So
yeah.
I completely agree and appreciate you and your team's work on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I also reiterate the work that you're doing, and I really was happy to hear you talk about the spirit of collaboration, and that to do this non-point source issues with the trash requires collaboration and partnership and working with the various entities. So thank you for that, and hopefully you can able to work with those cities that are upstream that are having a little bit more difficulty, and let us know how we can be supportive. But I am supportive of the WDR. And then my final question was about the data sharing or the data submission. I know there's some concerns around the ADA compliance. Can you explain again, how do you intend for them to submit it? It's going to be through an Excel sheet?
Okay, so there's two separate parts. There's the electronic data, and then there's the ADA. There's a summary that would be ADA compliant. So for the electronic data, that would be a spreadsheet or some other tool, Excel or one of the other data management tools. And it would... Sorry, I was trying to formulate my answer and I blanked in there. In that case, the data would come into it. So the annual report is written. You know, it's a narrative in general. It's pictures, it's tables, it's copies of the forms they use. Usually they submit it to us in PDF. And so when we want to go and actually do year-over-year comparisons of data, we have to go to the report and pull it out, put it into a table. That increases the time and resources needed. It increases opportunities for error. What we're asking for is that the data that was used by the reporting entity that in their table in their PDF, that they just stick it in to an Excel or other similar tool. And that way we have it and we can just put it into our analysis and look at it that way. We also have asked that it be compatible with the state data network so that eventually it can be uploaded into that. We originally were going to ask for it to go straight there, but we had some conversations with the state board staff that runs that program, and it is a new component that you can put in Polygon data, and there are not set established protocols. So we didn't want to hold up reporting while that new process was being developed. So that's why we said, give us the data electronically. We'll have it. We can use it right away. And hopefully with a little bit of time, the tools from State Board will improve, and then we can just upload it all. Regarding the ADA, What we're asking for there is that in addition to their long annual report PDF, and this electronic submission, that they also do a summary that has been put through either as an appendix or an attachment that has been put through the ADA compliance software. And then that way we can upload it. While there are tools for ADA, they vary. We found out something ADA'd by EPA meets ADA requirements, but does not meet California's specific requirements. So if we're already seeing those issues with EPA, you know, the feds, we recognize that might be a burden to do. Some of these reports are very long. So we're like, okay, let's get what's important here is getting the information to the public. That can be condensed into a small, short summary, which is much easier to ADA. We can put it on the website. Then people are aware of the fact that the data is there and there's a corresponding report that's available, you know, and that we can make it accessible by request.
So I guess in terms of the data itself and then the ADA, this is an iterative process that you're basically saying we're learning as we go, and there's a commitment to continue to revisit the protocols and the processes to ensure that there's full transparency for our stakeholders to be able to read it, that need the ADA, and then the stakeholders that actually want the data for their own analysis, and to ensure that regulation and enforcement is actually taking place. So, you know, it's not ideal. You know, I am... Professor, in April of next year, we're subject to the ADA, and I know I've been to training sessions, and it's like the wild, wild west of what compliance tools that you need to use. It's actually quite daunting, but I do acknowledge that universities, we were on a much farther timeline than governments. So governments, as Ben Harris had mentioned, should have more practice at this than us at the university level. As long as we have the commitment that's an iterative process and we're going to continually revisit this, and when we get concerns, you know, we'll sure to try to address them. I would be okay with as is, but I'm sure my colleagues have other questions to add.
I would add that some of the reporting isn't being done by governments, so we want to make sure that we're not doing a burden on them that may not have exposure to those tools yet. We also, if we move to the WDRs without an expiration date, you know, the tools are rapidly evolving, both in terms of the running the compliance on the document itself and tools for reading documents. I had concerns that if we put very strict ADA and electronic reporting requirements into a WDR, which does not expire, that we may perpetuate obsolete requirements in a couple years because the tools are evolving so quickly. So I thought there was benefit in keeping a part of those original asks so that we could get the data out, make it more usable, more accessible without adding requirements that may be very quickly obsolete. Nobody wants to reopen a WDR anytime soon. So.
Board Member Camacho.
Yes, thank you. I think I'm going to go in a little different direction here. When I was going through this report or reading the letters from the City of Long Beach in regards to encampments for the unhoused. And so one thing I just wanted to clarify is that does trash resulting from the unhoused encampments considered to be point source or non-point source?
Both.
It would depend, but there it's not. It would depend on how it's moving, basically. That's usually the defining difference between it. Yeah, it depends. It can be both. It can end up as both.
Mm-hmm. I could add, if I may, mm-hmm. if encampments are within the MS4 footprint and the trash from those encampments drains into the MS4 system and then is discharged to the river, it's a point source. If any trash from the encampment were to go directly into the water body, it's a non-point source. This order, though, only regulates the non-point sources that have been named specifically in the TMDL, and the action for this order is just to implement those load allocations.
Yeah, and I kind of understand the specificity of this, and that's why I asked the question. But still, I believe, and I don't have the data here, but it could be that the encampments could be a really significant source of trash for many of our water bodies. And so, and I know that the City of Long Beach was also asking about other tools or other authorities that maybe could be granted or had to help expedite this issue from the city and jurisdictional perspective. So I'd like to place that as a topic of conversation on our January report, as most cities, I don't know of any cities that's not grappling with the encampment issues of the unhoused, especially the trash resulting from that. And there are a lot of legalities associated with that too, is when does encampment possessions become trash, et cetera. And there's a lot to unpack in that whole issue. But I think that we have to do a better job of assisting jurisdictions, assisting the communities to kind of expedite the issue of what to do with trash coming from those areas.
Okay. Board Member Camacho, you pointed out something that made me remember something else we wanted to point out. So many of the specified areas in these existing TMDLs do provide places for homeless people to live. And the existing MFAC BMP program is intended to address all sources of non-point source trash. And so we've talked with responsible entities for some of those TMDLs about, so they must provide regular collection and disposal of the trash in those areas, and then they must implement BMPs to make sure that trash doesn't build up between collection events. And so some of the BMPs could be additional trash cans or trash services to these areas. And so there is a way under this waiver to address homeless encampments that are in these non-point source areas. And we've talked about that, and we've talked about the availability of funding under Section 319 of the Clean Water Act, which sets aside funding for non-point sources. And we've let responsible entities know about the availability of those funding. So that's, I'm sorry, it took a long way to get to the point that you reminded me of, which is that we have funding available.
We actually just had a conversation in October with Ventura Land Trust on that issue in particular.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we could talk more about that and learn more about what's available as well in our January meeting.
And we do have, as we've mentioned a couple times over the last year, we did do a large award to address the East Fork of San Gabriel River trash TMDL. And so in those conversations, we discussed that it might be a model for looking at applying for and hopefully getting funds for some of the other trash TMDLs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and funding is always necessary and great too. But what I also sense from many of these letters are kind of cross-jurisdictional authorities too. And, you know, the quagmire associated with trying to clean up somebody else's property, et cetera. And so maybe that's something for us to dive more deeply into and learn more about. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to support your recommendation today. I just wish that I could do it with full-throated applause. And that's not so much because of the narrow proposal that you've put before us today, but because of just the larger issue of how we're dealing with our TMDL program and especially trash in our waterways. So let me say this. Look, I get it completely that WDRs are a stronger enforcement tool than a waiver. I understand that that we don't have all of the data that we would like to have. At the same time, though, I notice that in terms of the progress that we have made in the past 5 years under the trash waiver, that the results are reported as being mixed. So not stellar. And I also see that in these WDRs, really the principal changes are changes in nomenclature rather than requiring more of our permittees in order to deal but if this isn't a trash crisis that we're dealing with on our streets, I really don't know what it is. And I understand that we're only dealing with non-point sources here, but I dispute the contention that non-point sources are trivial. I think that what is left on the streets are mostly non-point sources, and I take Ms. Newman's comment that if it gets into the storm drain system, then it's a point source. Right. However, in terms of what I'm seeing around the city, much of that stuff is not going to get into the storm drain, into the MS4 system. It's going to blow and at some point enter a waterway. And I also understand that the cities are doing a lot in terms of collecting the trash and having monitoring between trash collections. But still, at the end of the day, our eyes tell us that we're not making the progress that I believe we should be making. And I also understand your comment about evolving tools. I get it. On the other hand, if surgeons were always looking for evolving, you know, technologies in terms of surgery, a lot of patients would be dead. And so I don't think we're in a position that we can wait for things to evolve, new technologies, new data, new abilities before taking really a committed stand against the problem that we're dealing with. And, you know, and also when we take a look at the dates of these TMDLs, you know, for the LA River, 2022, these TMDLs, we've blown through those deadlines. So as I said, I'll support what you're recommending today. I understand that the time has expired on the trash waiver. I actually couldn't quite understand why 5 years ago we opted for a lesser tool in terms of robust environmental protections and didn't do the WDRs right at that time, but that was a decision that was made 5 years ago. I'm glad that we're opting perhaps for a more robust device today, but actually making that robust device make a difference is going to require, I'm afraid, some level of enforcement. It's going to need that because you know, 5 years of a waiver and all of the good feelings about collaboration have not resulted in meaningful trash reductions, I'm afraid. And I think the report here tells us that the results have at best been mixed over this period of time. So having said that, I don't mean to be critical of the work of staff, which I think is stellar, and I completely understand that COVID, the fires, it's there is so much to deal with very limited resources. I'll make one comment for the housekeeping one for the lawyers to deal with. As I was reading through this, I read that there is a section Roman numeral 3. Right, I think on page, I don't know, 8. And then looking through it on page, I think, around 16 or something, it becomes a Roman numeral 6. Could you just take a look at that? Maybe I missed Roman numeral 4, Roman numeral 5.
I can take a look at that.
I'm sorry?
Yes, I can take a look at that.
Yeah, would you please? Because we need to make sure that the numbers follow. So Those are my comments. Perhaps we can take a couple of minutes or a minute for you to take a look at that. Make sure that our numbering is correct.
Yes, I can do that.
Okay.
Chair Nahai, while our lawyer is looking into that, would you like staff to provide a response to some of that direction and let you know that we'll follow it, or?
I would be grateful beyond words.
Okay, I will start, Elijah, and you can fill in or correct me, but thank you for the direction. We are not asserting that non-point source trash is trivial. I just wanted to clarify that for the record. This is a part of an overall effort to reduce trash in the region, and we will implement this WDR if the board approves it. And as you heard Elijah in her presentation, she perhaps, and in her response to comments, took maybe too much responsibility and her and or her unit for her on her own behalf or her unit's behalf of for the lack of data under the program, but she has identified a path forward to fix it moving forward, and so we will do that. But regarding trash on the streets that makes its way into our water bodies, staff hears what you're saying, and we are committed to ensuring compliance with our TMDLs, and we hear the direction from the board here and in other meetings to prioritize compliance with TMDLs and are prepared to move forward with that, and we will base our priorities for compliance assurance on TMDL deadlines that have passed. And we agree with the urgency and the seriousness of this issue, and we'll definitely take you up on that and on that direction and heed it and move forward.
Okay, and let's please include this as an item on our retreat, so that we can take the time to really examine it and come up with our path forward.
Of course.
Okay, thank you.
Right, and then are there corrections we need to make to the numbering of the tentative WDRs?
I could, by that quizzical look, I must be wrong. I mean, I always say if I could count, I wouldn't have gone to law school. But in my thing, I go from a Roman numeral 3 and it goes to a Roman numeral 6. What am I missing?
Okay, I might have a different version. Can you guys send me the version that was sent to Chair?
Sure. He'll be looking at the version that's on the board member SharePoint site.
Okay.
So we'll check that.
And our internal version doesn't have that, but I don't know if something changed.
Yeah.
Chair, can we take a small break?
I think in the motion we can say,
yes.
Okay. We direct staff to just, it's just the numbers. It doesn't make any substantive change. The page numbers are all fine. It's just, in my version, the Roman numerals aren't.
I was going to propose to approve the WDR, understanding that some of the numbering might need to change, but nothing substantive. And I appreciate your team's work on this. I think it's a terrific first or part of a holistic effort to make change. So thank you.
Thank you. So we have a motion, right? We have a second, a motion from Vice Chair Ashton, a second from Board Member Mendez. We can have the roll call.
Vice Chair Ashton?
Yes, thank you.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. That concludes that item, and we will now move to closed session, and I will ask legal counsel to announce the items that will be discussed during closed session.
Item 12G, the Boeing Company versus Regional Water Quality Control Board, Los Angeles Region. Item 12L, the Los Angeles Region Water Permit, Cities of LA County, Commission of State Mandates, Test Claim 13TC01. Item 12K, People of the State of California, XREL, California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Los Angeles Region versus Prologis.
All right, so we're going to adjourn this meeting. We will not return. Correct.
We're not going to come back to open session.
So our next board meeting will be held on February 26th of 2026 in this room. However, the board will hold its annual retreat and priority setting discussion on January 22nd, 2026. Thank you all so very much. Happy holidays and Happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to everyone.